What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
All right, let's cut out the formalities. Hi, hello, Rico Bronya, episode 531. This is a freaking disaster. I mean, there is no other way to look at it. I don't care how positive one wants to be. I don't care how long a baseball season is. Oh, it's a long season. Calm down. You're never as bad as you are when you're bad. Never as good as you are when you're good. Whatever. This team is finding new ways to lose on a nightly basis. And if you think, and I hope what I'm about to say turns out to be false, but I'll say it anyway. If you think all of a sudden on August 17th or August 22nd or September 5th, a team that has been garbage for 2 months is all of a sudden going to find themselves, they're going to have a find Jesus moment all of a sudden, I got a bridge to sell you. And I don't want to panic, but I am panicking. I'm panicking because we could sit here every day and say, well, they're still in a playoff spot. They're still right there. They still have 7 games with the Phillies. What happened on Thursday night, in a lot of ways, was the worst loss of the season. I know many will argue that Wednesday's game was the worst loss of the season when David Peterson took a deuce on the mound after the Mets handed him a 6-0 lead. But you know what made the finale worse? And don't worry, we'll talk about both games. And somehow we'll pick a Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series, a net negative, or read your angry emails. We got a lot to do. Get comfortable. Get a pillow. But what made the finale of this series so goddamn bad is that it's the rubber game. You still have a chance to win the series. They actually get a competent start from a starting pitcher. Let's have a parade. Kodai Senga, to his credit, went out and he delivered. And in 2025, because our standards are different, 5 2/3 innings, really good. And this team needed it. They got a good start from their starter. And while they didn't score a lot of runs, they were clutch, right? After Senga puts a couple of guys on base and Tyler Rogers gives up the soft contact hit, what do? They immediately respond. And they're set up with a 3-2 lead, and the formula is right there. Because the things that have effed the Mets over the last few weeks, really since the absolute fluke of a winning streak came to a conclusion, is that they don't score runs, they're not clutch, and their starting pitching is the pits. Well, through 7 innings, while they didn't put up any kind of crooked number offensively, they were clutch. Lindor's home run in the third, the 2 runs they scored in the 6th inning, Pete Alonso coming through with a 2-out hit, Brandon Nimmo getting a sacrifice fly. So while they weren't murderer's row, they hit. They had good starting pitching. And they hand the baseball to Ryan Helsley with his huge introduction and the flames on the scoreboard and the Hells Bells playing. Let me just tell you right now, ban that intro. Until you do something here, until you aren't blowing games left and right, you don't get a fancy intro. I don't give a rat's ass what you did in St. Louis, and I don't care that your name is Helsley, and it's Hells Bells. Intro is gone. We have cheapened the closer intro. He's not even the closer. And Ryan Helsley comes in, no excuses. It's a clean inning. Sure, it's the heart of the Braves batting order, but the heart of the Braves batting order is a rookie who's having a great year in Drake Baldwin, Marcelo Zuna, who's just a scumbag, and Michael Harris, who all of a sudden has become the hottest guy in baseball. Can you get 3 outs, bro? But that's what made this game so bad. It's set up. They got the good starting pitching. They got decent relief from Tyler Rogers. They got the clutch hitting. and they're six outs away from a neat and tidy victory, the kind of win they would have had in April. Remember April when the Mets were actually good? Yeah, long time ago. And Ryan Helsley, in what is such a perfect team effort, because this team sucks as a team. Lindor said something after the game. He said, hey, we win as a team, we lose as a team. I love that from a leader. You guys suck as a team. So Ryan Helsley said, all right, guys, hold my beer. I mean, the starting pitching was good today. Oh, that's cool. You got some clutch hitting? I got you. I'm going to give up this lead before you can blink. And here's what really ticked me off about that eighth inning. I like to say about closers or relievers, it's one thing to blow a lead. Like, that's terrible. Obviously, it's a buzzkill when he gave up the RBI double to Michael Harris and all of a sudden it's a 3-3 game. That's bad enough. But you know what makes it worse? When you make it worse. Because Ryan Helsley could have very easily, with a runner on second and one out, just gotten the next two guys out. Ozzie Albies is hitting 222, yet he sees the Mets and his eyes light up. Go get the next two outs. You're at home. Hand it to the offense to maybe scratch out a run, and you can win 4-3. And what does he do? He gives up an absolute bomb to Ozzie Albies. Now, I'm sitting in different seats for this game. What a moron I am going to all three games. I am the biggest idiot out there. But I'm sitting high up. I'm sitting in the 400s tonight. Did not have my season tickets. I sold them before I actually realized, hey, I want to go to this game with my son. Silly me. So I'm sitting in the 400s where you're a little bit higher than I'm normally sitting. But here's what I saw. Here's the vantage point of what I saw in the Albies play. I saw Juan Soto deke the crap out of everybody. And I'm not sure if you saw it on TV or it was shown this way, but Albies hits a fly ball to right field. I thought Soto had a chance to catch it. And it bounces off the right field wall. It came very close to being a home run. And he, in my opinion, deked the daylights out of Michael Harris. So when the ball bounces off the wall and Soto does a great job getting to it quickly, I'm thinking, wow, he could throw him out at the plate. As crazy as that sounds, a double off the wall with a runner on second. I thought he had a shot to throw him out at the plate. So far, I'm complimenting Juan Soto, right? Great deke. Got to the ball quickly, and instead he's thrown to second base. If he's throwing to the cutoff man, maybe I'm nuts. But again, my vantage point in 418, he's got a chance to somehow throw out Michael Harris at the plate. And instead, he makes the throw to second. The run scores. Albies is safe. And Ryan Helsley completes the choke job. So, what really kills me about this game, the finale of this series, is it was there. A series victory was there. And I promise you, we weren't going to be, you know, popping fireworks or champagne on this Rico Bronya if they had won this game. We would have voiced our concerns. We would have said, thank God they won this game. It would have been a disaster if they didn't. But hey, nice, tidy victory. And that's not what happened. And it's not what happened because right now this baseball team does everything to lose. Think about these games over this stretch. It's 13 out of 15, whatever absurd number it is. Some nights it'll be the defense. Hello, Brett Beatty. Most nights it'll be the starting pitching. Some nights the offense will go limp. And tonight, or last night, depending on when you're consuming the Rico Bronya, it was the bullpen. It was David Stearns' big moves before the July 31st trade deadline. And I like those moves. I like trading for Ryan Helsley. But we could call Ryan Helsley out. He's reminding me of Billy Taylor. And this is a problem because there's not one aspect of this team that you can rely on. We figured it's the bullpen. We figured if you can just give the back end of this bullpen a lead, don't worry. But now we start to think about Ryan Helsley's time here as a Met. You think about the Giant game. You think about the Brewer game. You think about this game against the Braves. And you start to realize, holy crap, he's been terrible. And sometimes it takes a few bad performances and a few blown saves for you to realize, wait a second. Now I'm starting to think differently about what happened in that game against San Francisco. I'm starting to think a little differently about that game against Cleveland. I'm starting to think differently about the absolute choke job both times against Milwaukee. Ryan Helsley now, let me look at this up just to confirm, 6 appearances as a New York Met. 6. He has now allowed runs in 4 of those games. He has blown 2 saves, and he's taken a loss. It's been a disaster. Let's just call it out. It's been a disaster. And this is the risk that you run into when you acquire a relief pitcher who's in a contract year. You have no idea. Relievers are, like I always say, they're lottery tickets. Now, I think Ryan Helsley still has a chance to be helpful to this team. I hope. I mean, geez, can you imagine that sunk cost? And I would have made the trade. I'm not sitting here telling you David Stearns shouldn't have made the trade. We were all excited when they traded for Ryan Helsley. But this is the problem with relievers. They are so up and down. Like Tyler Rogers, who gave up the base hit to Ozzie Albies. Here's the thing about Tyler Rogers where I just have to accept it. He doesn't throw hard. He doesn't strike guys out. And so when he gets soft contact, which he gets a lot of the time, sometimes it finds a hole. And that sucks, man. And it's bad luck. So when Tyler Rogers gave up the base hit to Ozzie Albies, I was frustrated. It was bad luck. When I think of Tyler Rogers taking the loss in the Cleveland game, remember the contact? It was bad luck. Ryan Helsley is supposed to strike people out. He averages 11 strikeouts per 9 innings. He throws 100 miles per hour. He has a slider that we were told, oh, remember the metrics on his slider? Oh, my, lefties can't hit his slider. What happened to that? What happened to lefties hitting 0-50 against this slider since he's put the Met pinstripes on to hit like 750 against that slider? So Helsley is supposed to get swing and misses. He's not supposed to run into the bad luck that Tyler Rogers may sometimes run into. And what has Helsley done since he's come here? He's given up a lot of hard contact. Where are the strikeouts? You got 0 of them in the 8th inning of this game. Am I ready to Devin Williams his ass? Not really, because I look at the rest of the bullpen and I say, all right, if I bury him, who am I promoting? We know about what Reed Garrett did in game 2 of this series. More on that later. Tyler Rogers, you trust. We went through the issues with him. So what do you even do? Now, here's my... And if you're a longtime Rico listener, because I'm sure there's plenty of people listening to the Rico that maybe are swooping in because they like to drink Met fan pain. If that's the case, welcome aboard. Or maybe you just found the Rico Bronya, whether it was on YouTube or where you download your podcast. If that's the case, welcome. But if you're a longtime Rico listener or FAN listener, you know I love to use Edwin Diaz in certain situations in the 8th inning. Because if the best hitters are coming up, silly me, what a weird philosophy. I like to use my best reliever. So I did think when the 8th inning ran around with the Mets having a 1-run lead, boy, it's not crazy to use Edwin Diaz here for 2 reasons. Number one, he's the Mets' best pitcher. And so the Braves are sending up their best hitters in this lineup, 3, 4, 5. Why save Edwin Diaz for A, a situation that may not come? Spoiler alert, it didn't. Or B, hitters that are not as good as the ones he's about to face. Why? Why not is my feeling. And I've had that feeling a lot. And really, Buck Showalter was the one that scratched that itch for me, where he would do it. He would go to him in the 8th inning, sometimes not even bring him out to the 9th for a 6-out save, but just use him in the 8th inning thinking, hey, this is my best chance. And looking at some of the career numbers of the hitters coming up in that 8th inning, Marcelo Zuna, 1-for-10 in his career against Edwin Diaz with 7 strikeouts. Huh, that would have been cool. That would have made sense. There isn't a lot of a sample size of the other hitters, like Drake Baldwin's 0-for-2. I'm not going to go nuts about it. Michael Harris is 0-for-1 with a strikeout. I can't go nuts about it. But Marcelo Zuna, I can. And the numbers say Edwin Diaz has had favorable matchups with him. So, silly me, I don't think that Carlos Mendoza considers this, But I consider it, I've always considered it, maybe you go to your best pitcher in the eighth inning. Maybe. Now, to be fair, Helsley had good career numbers against Marcell Ozuna as well, 0 for 4 with 3 strikeouts. So it's not as if Ozuna owned Helsley and couldn't hit Diaz, but I think you understand my point. It wouldn't have been nuts to go to Diaz in the eighth inning and then go to Helsley in the ninth inning. So I said there are two reasons you could do that. Number one, Diaz is your best pitcher. Use him against the Braves' best hitters. The other thing is, and I don't know if this is affecting Helsley. He was asked about it after the game. He downplayed it. He's adjusting to a new role. They acquired a closer and told him, go pitch the eighth inning. And maybe, I don't think this is the reason, but I have to be open-minded. Maybe that adjustment is contributing to it. So if you go to Diaz in the eighth and he gets the job done, now you can give Ryan Helsley his normal ninth inning role. But Mendy doesn't do this. Mendy's not big on what Buck did. He's not big on that suggestion that, hey, sometimes you should use your best reliever in the eighth inning because the better hitters are coming up. With that said, Ryan Helsley deserves the blame more than anybody else because he failed. The other thing that was very disheartening from this loss is when Ryan Helsley gives up the two runs, the Mets have 6 outs. Like, they're allowed to come back. And to their credit, when Tyler Rogers gave up the lead and gave up the RBI single to Albies in the 6th inning, the Met offense did respond. Lindor got a base hit. Soto drew a walk. Lindor also stole second and went to third on a bad throw by Baldwin. And then Soto even stole second. So the Mets continue to do that well. That's the only thing they do well. Like, literally. They will run well. They haven't been thrown out in forever. I think they've set a franchise record now, 38, 39 consecutive successful stolen bases. So that's cool. That's a positive for anyone looking for one. They steal bases. Everyone steals bases. Soto's done a great job of that. And the Met offense responded in the 6th inning. Nimmo with the sack fly, a great at-bat by Pete Alonso, who had a rough day outside of that. But in the 6th inning, big RBI single. In the 8th inning, after Ryan Helsley blew the game in the top of the 8th inning, what'd the offense do? And specifically, what did Juan Soto do? And this is going to sound like a broken record. This series, in so many ways, was the freaking typical Juan Soto series. Because Juan Soto went 3-for-11 with a home run and 2 RBIs. Not bad. Drew a bunch of walks. Not bad. Like, those are good numbers. You could say, what are you bitching about? How could you complain about Juan Soto? He's stealing bases. He's drawing walks. Like, all good. How could there be a problem? He drew 3 walks in this series. So 3-for-11, on base, 6 out of 14 plate appearances. Wonderful. And yet when he came up with a chance to make the ultimate impact, what did he do? We will get to game 2 a little bit later on, but how about game 3 in the 8th inning? After Francisco Lindor gets that infield hit and Lindor has broken out of it, good for him. Positive sign. What does Juan Soto do against Dylan Lee, the same guy he failed against not too long ago in a big spot where we thought this is going to be Juan Soto's moment? What'd he do? He struck out on 3 pitches. The night before, when the Mets are down by 3 runs and they put together that 2-out rally in the 5th inning and he comes up as the tying run and the place is electric, what did he do? He fought back from 0-2, he got it to 3-2, and he struck out and basically fell on his ass. This series perfectly describes Juan Soto. It's not that his numbers are bad. You can look at them and say they're fine, and they are. Just like his numbers in this series, 3-for-11, 3 walks, a home run, and a couple of RBIs, like, no problem. But where is he with the impact moment? Where is he? And the answer is nowhere to be found. Now, I've got good news and I got bad news. The good news is, no, I'm not telling you this is him for the rest of his career. I'm not an idiot. Sometimes I feel like one. Or maybe I sound like one. I'm not telling you this is him. He can't handle New York or this side of New York or the contract, and he's a bum. I'm not saying any of that. He'll be fine. There will be a moment we laugh at this, like we laugh about Mike Piazza not being clutch his first year. Juan Soto, I'm sure, will have a ton of great moments. But what about this year? We ain't getting any younger. This season, and you could tell me what his OPS is, you could tell me how many home runs he's hit. No one with a half a brain who has watched both Juan Soto and Pete Alonso thinks they're even on the same planet this year. Not a person. And if you think it, you're a liar. Or you're delusional. Pete's been much better. Why has Pete been much better? Because he's been clutch almost every time. Juan Soto has not. And I think it'll change. I hope it changes soon. I hope his moments are happening like tomorrow. But we have to be honest about what's happening here. How many times does he come up and we think this is his moment and he comes up small? I need it to change. You need it to change. We all need it to change, but it hasn't happened yet. So Soto comes up in this big spot and he strikes out on three pitches. And then Brandon Nimmo hits a little weak ground ball to first base. And then in the ninth inning against Raisel Iglesias, who lost his closer's job, got it back. They didn't trade him. He's had a mediocre season. The Mets don't just go down 1-2-3. You know how many pitches they saw in the ninth inning against Raisel Iglesias? Let me count it because I have it on my scorecard. 1, 2, 3, 4, 6. Six. Pete Alonso swings at the first pitch, grounds out. Jeff McNeil swings and misses, strikes out. Cedric Mullins hits the ball to center field like he basically did all night. Good night. And we all get to walk out of Citi Field absolutely disgusted by the garbage we just watched. If it isn't the starting pitching, it's the bullpen. If it isn't the bullpen, it's the starting pitching. If it isn't that, it's the offense. If it isn't that, it's the defense. This team is incredible with how they find ways to lose. And it's been going on for a while. I know that baseball is a game of streaks. This is not just a streak after a 7-game winning streak against the Angels and the Giants. It's not just that. It goes to before that. It goes to before the All-Star break. It goes to the Pittsburgh series, the Atlanta series. Just, it goes back to mid-June. It goes back to the Tampa series. And if you want to go back further, which I've done, if you go back to the last days of April, they are an under 500 team. So I'd love to give everybody a pep talk and tell you it's all going to be fine. I got no reason to believe it's going to be fine. Baseball is an incredible sport. It can humble you both ways. Last year, no one in our right mind, and I was positive about the Mets going into the year, but no one in our right mind saw the turnaround coming when it happened. And that was great, and that's beautiful. And that always gives you hope and always gives me hope that even in a lost season, things can turn on a dime. Folks, we're witnessing the opposite. They got off to a great start. They were neck and neck with the Phillies, and now they just lose on a nightly basis to the point where the playoff spot is in major, major jeopardy. And honestly, after they lost game two of this series, it was the first time where I'm like, damn, I really do think they're going to miss the playoffs. Now, I said that last year during a drunken Rico, where I said, we know this team isn't going to make the playoffs. And luckily, I got to laugh at it now. I am not drunk. I'm being honest. It is very difficult, other than blind faith, to believe, don't worry, they'll settle this and they'll be fine. The manager says the same thing every game. And here's the thing about Carlos, and I don't know what the right thing to say after these games are. There are some that says, I need a Terry Collins rant. I need to be fiery. I need to call people out. I don't know if that will ever make a difference, and I'm not sure this team would react to it. So I'm not even telling you Mendy has to be different. But I am telling you, as a fan, we all are, watching him after every game be very matter of fact. It's baseball. We're too talented. We'll be fine. It's getting old. And I acknowledge that there's nothing Carlos can say after games that's going to make any of us feel better. Because even if he gives you the rant that you want, what happens when they lose 5-2 the next day? And are we sure they're going to respond well to it? I'm not sure of that. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to read some emails. I think that's very healthy for all of us. And then I'll get into game two, because game two was just an abomination on every level. Where do we start? Oh, my God, these emails. You know what's funny about you people? When they lose, the emails explode. When they win, it's much more like quiet. But I was looking. I had like 75 new emails tonight, and then it like exploded to like 150.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Anyhow, here's Greg. Greg writes, huge fan of the Rico. Thank you for what you do. We appreciate that. At this point, and yet another disastrous stretch, is it time to bat Juan Soto leadoff? It's mind-boggling how clutch he has been and his lack of hitting with runners on. I can't take another LD ground ball to second base. What happened to him driving the ball to the opposite field? Who knows if it'll make a difference, but maybe, just maybe, it'll switch the mojo up. If nothing else, it'll get our $800 million man as many ABs as possible. We have to do something. Greg, I have suggested this a lot. Soto leading off makes sense. He's not going to do it. Angelo writes, Evan, you mentioned on the podcast the other day how with all this losing, all you can do is laugh. I'm not even joking. It's so bad right now, I'm literally dying laughing listening to you. Oh, thank you. Yeah, this email came in 5 minutes ago. So this is a live reaction email. It's just so pathetic at this point that the only joy I'm getting out of the Mets lately is hearing you and Hoffman get ticked off. When you start cracking up, it somehow makes this whole mess a little easier to take. The laughing actually makes me feel better. So keep it coming. Let's hear a laugh right now. We need it. Okay. This team sucks. It's so freaking horrible. Does that make you feel better? Nunzio writes, death of a season. I hate to say those words, and I hope I'm wrong, but I think we just witnessed the death of the season. Every loss, there's a different guy to blame. Definition of a bad team. There's no fire in this team anymore. We have zero wins when trailing after eight innings. The magic and swagger from last season is dead. Again, I hope I'm wrong. We all hope we're wrong. I'm not at the death of the season point. For those that are new to the Rico, the death of the season term was coined by me describing my dad during the 2023 season. During the 2023 season, we all kind of kept hope for a while, and I think it was the Met-Yankee game that Scherzer imploded in, where my dad was optimistic, thought they were going to be fine, and I looked into his eyes when Scherzer imploded, and I saw the death of a season. Which turned out to be very accurate, unfortunately. Brian writes, enough. I readily acknowledge this is a typical overreaction, but Robert Saleh, Carlos Mendoza's press conferences follow the same script as these Mets games. You tune in wanting to feel something, and you leave unsettled and annoyed. Mendoza pulling Senga was foolish, and everyone knew it. I don't care if Albies took him deep earlier that game. That hook was too quick. Allowing this free fall to continue is bad business for Steve Cohen. I'm being conditioned to expect blown leads and losses. This team is too talented and they play so poorly. Drastic measures must be taken so confidence can be restored. I love him for his candor, but it's time to fire Mendoza. All right, Brian, bunch of things I disagree with. Number one, they're not firing Carlos Mendoza, nor should they. I get it. They suck. We're all worried. The team is collapsing. I don't think in the midst of a second season where this is clearly a failure of players, we should fire the manager. I don't think it's an option, and I don't think it'd be healthy for the team. So let's get that out of the way. Let's get to Senga, because you bring up a decision that was made in the sixth inning that I have to admit I agreed with. There are going to be times where I don't like what Mendy does, specifically in game one of this series when he had Gregory Soto warming up and he didn't use him to go to Matt Olson. It made no sense, especially when you see that Matt Olson was 1-for-11 in his career against Soto and he let Clay Holmes stay in. I think with Senga, who delivered a wonderful performance, he walks the leadoff hitter in the sixth inning. You just can't do it in a 1-1 game. After he gets the ground out and the strikeout, I'm feeling all right. When he gives up the base hit to Michael Harris, and remember, he fell behind Harris 3-0, which is another warning sign. Two outs, two on. You have an incredibly fresh bullpen, which is amazing to say, considering how bad the starting pitching's been. I loved going to Rogers. What didn't make sense from Mendy was Brooks really not warming up. And Hoff, you interrupt anytime if there was an update like telling us Brooks Raley's hurt, because that would not surprise me, because I did not understand as Rogers finished the sixth, and I know he gave up the base hit, obviously, soft contact, but gave up the hit. But as the seventh inning was rolling around, especially when he gave up the hit to Profar, I thought with Matt Olson coming up, you're going to go to Brooks Raley. I thought it made sense. Never did it. So I thought that one was questionable. But I didn't disagree with pulling Senga. As much as I wanted him to go six innings or deeper than that, you got to manage along with the game. There's two on. He just gave up a hit. He just fell behind a hitter. Remember, Senga didn't walk anybody in this game. Like, one of the real positives of Kodai's performance is that his command was really good. In the sixth inning, he walked the guy and he fell behind Harris 3-1. So I did not hate the pull. The problem was he didn't get the job done.
Just an FYI, I don't see anything on Brooks Raley, but you were not the only person that brought it up too, because watching a broadcast, I think it was either Gary or Keith was like, where's Brooks Raley? So they were on that too.
That always makes me feel good. We're thinking alike at least. I'll tell you what I guarantee they didn't say. I bet you they didn't bring up using Diaz in the eighth inning. That's an Evan thing that not enough people realize should be a thing. Use your best reliever when the best hitters are coming up.
No, they did not say that. But what they did say, though, was your state when you said a long time ago about Soto making that beautiful deke and should have gone home with it. They said the same thing.
Good.
They were on that as well. So
it's funny. You go to a game and you see a lot of stuff, but then you're also not sure because you're not seeing a million different replays and different angles. I'm sitting so high up, I wasn't sure if my brain was playing tricks on me. So I'm glad that they brought that up. I'll tell you another one, and this is in game two, that I noticed, and I mentioned this on the air on Evan and Tiki, and a caller said, no, they never showed a replay of it. When Alonso got thrown out at the plate on Marte's base hit, remember when they were down 9-6 and Marte came through? I was staring at Pete Alonso. He was not running hard. And I don't know if it was he was tired. I don't know if he was just, hey, I'm running 3-2. I don't need to bust it. I'm not sure what it was. And you know I love Pete. I'm not going out of my way to take a shot at Alonso. He was not running hard around third. And so when he was thrown out, I know a lot of people were stunned, like, 3-2, he's running. How could he be thrown out? I wasn't, because he wasn't moving fast. So I don't know if they showed that, but that was another thing I noticed just being at the game.
Yeah, when they came back from break, they did show him running the base pass. Now, the thing is, he did get a good jump because he's running on 3-2.
Right.
But you're right. As he was going around the bases, and they kind of gave him a pass, they didn't critique, but I watched it, dude. Like, I'm not saying he's Giancarlo Stanton speed, but he's not that far away from it.
That could just be it, too, that he just wasn't fast. Let's get to that second game because – dude, I'm making a list. I'm checking it twice, and we are naughty and not nice, but I continue the running list of worst losses of the year. And what we do is when this season is over, good or bad, if there's a good result, bad result, we all know it'll be a bad result, we will have a Rico Bronya offseason edition. I expect every single person that is listening right now on August 15th, 16th, 17th, whatever day you're listening, to be back in October listening to the podcast where we go through all the losses. I want loyalty. We all got to listen to that. We got to go through the pain. But I have a running list. And the reason I have a running list is because you don't want to forget. It's easy for there to be bad losses in the moment. We say it's the worst of the year, and then you kind of forget how bad it actually was. Game two against Atlanta, right after Pete breaks the record and the Mets score a million runs, this is so up there as one of the worst losses of the year on so many levels. Number one, when they come out in the first inning and just bomb Carlos Carrasco, and they bombed him, leadoff double by Lindor, walk, two-run single, sack fly, it's 3-0. Then in the second inning, they bomb him some more. Juan Soto pimp jobs a two-run home run. Jeff McNeil rips a double, and it is 6-0. I don't know if there is a game that the Mets played this season where I was as confident as I was there. And I know I shouldn't have been, because they blew a 5-0 lead 2 days earlier, and the Mets lose basically every night. So why would I be confident? And it was a weird night. There was a long rain delay, which oddly benefited me because I was meeting my wife at the game. She was running late. She walked in right at first pitch at 8:40. So I'm like, oh, this is great. Little date night. And they're up 6-0. And in the fourth inning, we're talking about God knows what. We're talking about our vacation coming up. We're talking about the kids. We're talking about, hey, you want to do this for our anniversary? The baseball game is background noise because it's 6-0. It's now late. And David Peterson, who is very tough to criticize because he's had such a good year. And we all could have bad days. I'm sure I have plenty of bad days. I'm sure there are days you may listen to me, whether on the Rico or the Fan, and say, boy, I'd normally like Evan. He sucked today. I never do it on purpose, but sometimes it happens. We all have our bad days. But David Peterson picked the absolute worst time, the worst time, to do what he did on Wednesday night. You have a 6-0 lead, and all the little warning signs were there. They were all there. Like, even in the third inning, he ran into trouble when he put a couple of guys on base, actually loaded the bases up and made a big pitch against Ozzie Albies to get out of it. And so, third inning, I was like, he got out of it. It's 6-0. I feel pretty good. When you walk Sean Murphy on four pitches with a 6-0 lead to start the fourth inning, warning sign number one. When you walk Nacho Alvarez on four pitches, warning sign. When you walk Nick Allen, who I can't stand him. Oh, my God. And you know what else I can't stand? I can't stand little players who aren't very good, who play shortstop, who wear the number two. Because they're all doing it to honor Jeter, who haunted us 2.5 decades ago. You know what I mean? Like, so even when Nick Allen does something, I'm thinking of Derek Jeter, and that drives me nuts too. But you walk Nick Allen with the bases loaded in a 6-0 game. And when he did that, that was my first moment of, not they're going to lose, because I didn't even get to that point yet, but my first feeling of, oh, this isn't going to be easy. Okay, they're going to make a sweat. We saw it the night before with Clay Holmes blowing a big lead. When he gives up the triple on the very first pitch to Jurickson Profar, that makes a 6-1 game. 6-4. Now I'm just cursing. Like, are you kidding me? Is this son of a bitch going to get through the fourth inning? And then what does he do? He walks Matt Olson. So at this point, I don't think Carlos Mendoza has done anything wrong. Now, we love to kill him for things. I got no issue with him pulling David Peterson after the walk to Matt Olson. The guy walked 5 guys in 3 1/3 innings. He was single-handedly blowing the game. And I certainly didn't have a problem with him going to Reed Garrett. Reed Garrett, since the Yankee game on the 4th of July, had pitched to an ERA above 1, slightly above 1. So don't tell me how crappy Reed Garrett is. Was he crappy in this game? Oh, yes, sir, he was. But he was the right guy to go to. He just failed. I mean, this is the Mets, right? Everyone takes turns sucking. That's what we do. So even when you've done the job for a month, you will contribute. Lindor never said anything more accurate. We win together, we lose together. Oh, they lose together, all right. So you got Reed Garrett, who gives up the hit to Ozuna, and then he strikes out Ozzy Albies. I'm like, all right, Reed's going to at least get through it. All right. 6-5. Tack on some runs. It's basically the night before. And then he gives up the grand. Well, first he walks Sean Murphy, and then he gives up the grand slam to Michael Harris. Oh, my God. The disgust that I felt sitting there. Because now I'm reevaluating my life. I'm like, I dragged my wife to this game. This is where she's hanging out with her husband on a Wednesday night after she spent some time in the city. And she's exhausted at this point. And so I knew I'm not even going to get her through nine innings. I hate leaving early, but I'm also not an ogre. So, yes, I did leave early. Not something I want to do, but I like being married. And I do appreciate that she would come with me to this game. But what an absolute implosion. David Peterson, dude, we love you. You've had a great year. That can't happen. You want to tell me you're going to give us a dud or a mediocre performance? It happens. You can't give up nine runs. I know we gave up six of them, not all nine, but six runs in the fourth inning when the starting pitching for this team has been awful, when it's the Atlanta Braves whose offense this year has been putrid. Can't happen. And I know at 9-6 in the bottom of the fourth inning, I know it's not over, but I kind of knew this offense isn't going to respond. I just didn't think they would. I know they did the night before, but I just kind of had this sick feeling that they were not going to be able to fight back from it. And what made it even worse is that they had opportunities to fight back from it. Two on, two out in the fourth inning, two out rally. And Marte comes through with a base hit and the play we talked about where Alonso gets thrown out at the plate. It's like, can you make this worse? Can this possibly become more painful? Because Alonso's got to score on that play. And then it's a 9-7 game with two on. And who knows? Maybe it turns into something bigger. Maybe Cedric Mullins comes through. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know. And then the following inning was the Soto disaster, where again, they get two on and two out. Lindor draws a walk. Beatty comes through with a hit. And Soto strikes out. And after that, that was pretty much when I was gone. What a great decision that my wife made to say, let's get the hell out of here, because I didn't miss anything. What the hell did I miss? They did nothing in the sixth. McNeil bounced in with double play. They did nothing in the seventh. I mean, the only thing I missed is that Paul Blackburn saved the bullpen. But even Paul Blackburn, pitching five innings, allowing only one hit, just the two-run home run to Marcell Ozuna, even that had a negative. You know what the negative was? The negative was, is David Stearns going to sit here and watch Paul Blackburn and say, ah, gee, maybe he should make a start as the sixth man? When God knows, especially with the way this season is spiraling, give me the kids. We're going to get Nolan McClain on Saturday. Great. Give me Brandon Sproat during the stretch of 16 games in 16 days. Give it to me. Paul Blackburn, Frankie Montas, they have a valuable role on this team of eating innings when the starting pitcher gets knocked out early. And Paul Blackburn did a great job of doing that in game two, the way Justin Hagenman did that in game one. And there's a value to that. Like somehow the Mets in game three were set up with a fresh bullpen, despite the fact that they couldn't get their starter through the freaking fourth inning on Tuesday or Wednesday. They still had a fresh bullpen because of Hagenman and because of Blackburn. But to have a 6-0 lead with your best pitcher on the mound and then not just give it up, but give it all up, including more in the fourth inning, and then watch the LD offense do nothing the rest of the game? Yeah, that's bad. So this list I'm compiling of brutal Met losses, you know how deep this list now is? I got 18 games on the list. 18 games. 18. They've lost. How many losses do we have? 57? 18 of the 57 are like all-time brutal losses. That's how this season has gone. That's where this season is. And that's why, I'll tell you right now, you want to say this season's going to turn around? God bless you. The one positive, well, there's a few positives I can find, but I'll give you one positive, and that's Francisco Lindor, who woke up in this series. And that leads me to the pick segment brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. I'll give you a pick this weekend against the Seattle Mariners, and I'll make this pick for a combination of reasons. Number one, Lindor is getting hot, which we've seen in this series. That's a good sign. Number two, the guy he's facing, Luis Castillo, on Friday night, he's got good numbers against. I think Lindor is hitting a home run on Friday. So my pick, and it's positive. See, I can be positive sometimes, is that Lindor getting hot combined with him facing a pitcher he has success against, I would say an anytime Friday night home run by Francisco Lindor. Once again, that was the pick segment brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
More. You want to pick Rico, I'm the man now, star of the series? We got to pick somebody. It's kind of a rule around here. I think there are two choices off. I think it's either Francisco Lindor, who I just talked about, had a very good series. He was 6-for-11 in this series. Went 1-for-4 in game one, 2-for-3 in game two, but also drew two walks, and even 3-for-4 in the finale of this series. So he was 6-for-11. And he drew three walks, so he was on base 9 times in this three-game series. So I think he is an absolute worthy Rico, I'm the man now, star of the series. The other guy is Pete Alonso. Pete went 3-for-5, passed Darryl Strawberry in game one of this series, then passed him again with another home run, had three more hits in game two of this series, and drove in two more runs. And even in the finale, I know he grounded out on the first pitch against Raisel Iglesias, and he bounced into a double play. I know he wasn't perfect. But remember, he got what should have been the game-winning hit until the bullpen blew it. Alonso ended up 7-for-13 with 2 home runs and 6 RBIs. Those are the candidates. I don't think there's anybody. I mean, want to give Kodai Senga credit for pitching into the sixth inning? Great. You know, throw a party for him. Thank you, Kodai. But I think those are the clear candidates. To me, I would give it to Pete. And I'm not just giving it to Pete for the record. I'm not just being a nice guy. But the record was the only thing we kind of smiled at over the course of these three games. But 6 RBIs, he was impactful, I think, in every one of these games. So a close second for Lindor. And like I said in that pick segment, I feel good because Lindor is a streaky player. So I feel positive that he can build on that going into the Seattle series. But I do think the Rico, I'm the man now, star of the series should be Pete Alonso. Hoff, agree, disagree on that one?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on that 100%. I think, Tuesday, breaking a record, having a nice day like that, obviously, he has been so clutch. I unless Cal Raleigh did something today, I think he leads the majors in RBIs. So, I mean, he just continues to pile them up. Like, I'm tired of people saying, he doesn't do anything. He's been all season long. Even when he's had bad stretches, he still finds ways to drive in big-time runs.
I mean, the fact he's going to get to 100 RBIs in the middle of August is incredible. And he should have or could have won the Rico, I'm the man now, star of the series in the Cleveland series where they got swept. Because he was productive. Remember, he had the 4-hit game, but he also struck out with the bases loaded. I know there was some pushback on that. This is Pete's first award, the first time he's won the Rico, I'm the man now. You got to go all the way back to the Dodger series split out in Los Angeles when he had a huge series there. It is his 6th, which is the most of any Met. So he is the leader ahead of Francisco Lindor in Rico, I'm the man now, star of the series, but first time he's won it since the Dodgers series. Let's get to the net negative. Bro, I got 3 major candidates. Okay. And I'm going to list them, and then you tell me who you want to give the award to, and I'll tell you if I agree with you. Right. Number one, Ryan Helsley. I mean, this series was won. If Ryan Helsley does his job, simple job, you came here to do one thing, get three freaking outs in the eighth inning, well, the Mets win the series. And while we wouldn't be positive, the title of this Rico Bronya, New York Mets Are a Dumpster Fire, episode 531, that probably wouldn't be the title. And it pains me that episode 531 is so negative, considering 5 is David Wright and 31 is Mike Piazza. It feels like it should be a positive episode. So Ryan Helsley, blown save, rubber game of the series, that's candidate number one. Candidate number two is David Peterson. He was given a 6-0 lead, and he absolutely crapped the bed. The other candidate, I can't ignore him just because the Mets won, is Clay Holmes, who was given a 5-0 lead. And what does he do? A 5-1 lead, to be fair. And what does he do? He craps the bed. So I think those are the three candidates, the two starters that crapped the bed and the reliever that blew a game the Mets needed. Am I missing anybody, or are those the clearly the three prime candidates?
I mean, you could always go offensively and find somebody. I mean, Francisco Alvarez. No, I mean, he had a decent series.
No, he had a good first game. You can't get
a good
Alvarez.
First game. Yeah, I mean, did Mullins do anything? I like to pick on people. Mullins, he had a good first game. Everyone had a good first game.
Cedric Mullins was 0 for his last 8, 0 for his last 10 in this series, but did start 2 for his first 3.
Yeah, but I feel like that Tuesday game doesn't count because everyone did something. Besides,
it doesn't count. They blew a 5-1 lead that they had to respond. I mean, I think it counts. Off. Jesus.
Well, Juan Soto was the only one that didn't get a base hit that day up until they brought the position player in.
Yes, Luke Williams was the one that finally gave up the Soto base hit. I don't think there is anybody offensively. No. Like, I know they didn't score runs after scoring 6 early, and they didn't score a lot of runs. To me, it's those three guys. I don't think there's anybody else.
Well, and the third base coach, but that's besides the point, is sending Pete Alonso. I will say this much, because Peterson and Holmes have been more – Peterson's done his job for the most part. He had a bad day, and you could put it all on him. Helsley hasn't done his job at all since being on this team. It's time to get this the net negative. I'm sorry.
I disagree with you. I don't think that what you've done throughout the season should mean a goddamn thing when we're talking about this series. So you're right about Helsley. He failed. But I cannot get over a starting pitcher like David Peterson giving back a 6-0 lead and does it by walking the 8th hitter on 4 pitches and the 9th hitter, the immortal Nick Allen. Like, you could sell me on Helsley. I just don't like your reasoning. I mean, who cares what David Peterson did all season long? I'm talking about this series.
I understand that. And listen, the umpire, and I'm not going to put this all on the umpires, but the umpire was a little rough around the edges.
Come on.
Now, because this, you weren't listening to the broadcast. Keith and Gary were talking, even when Carlos Carrasco's pitching, they're like, this guy is a hitter's umpire. He is not going to give you any strikes. So David Peterson did not get calls that he probably should have.
All right. Let's do this very fairly. For the live YouTube audience, all right, I'm going to ask you, and you scroll through real quick, Hoff, and you're very honest. Okay. He's an honest guy, Pete Hoffman, so he's not going to be biased. Who is the net negative of this series between Ryan Helsley and David Peterson? I mean, they both contributed to the losses that they suffered. They both sucked. Like, no one's defending them. But do you go reliever that blew the 3-2 lead in the 8th inning, or do you go to the starting pitcher that was handed a 6-0 lead and absolutely imploded in the 4th inning? So, based on those responses, you tell me what you see, Hoff.
We got one Helsley, we got a Reed Garrett, and the rest are all Peterson.
By the way, good call on the Reed Garrett thing. Like, that is, he shouldn't win it, but honorable mention to Reed Garrett, because That was bad too. Like he didn't have to come in and blow the game. Like he didn't have to come in and put three guys on base and give up a grand slam home run. So honorable mention, Reed Garrett, but you're saying it's overwhelming, David Peterson?
Yeah, Peterson by far.
See, why don't you trust me, Hoff?
I need to fire up a little bit. I got to get a little excited. Listen, Ryan Helsley has been a huge disappointment. I want to point one thing out too. I did it on the WFAN Daily podcast I did before you jumped on. Ryan Helsley may have had a ton of strikeouts and a low ERA and 21 saves going into this once they got traded to the Mets. His WHIP coming into the Mets was a 1.39. He was allowing a lot of base runners, which means there was opportunity for him to continuously blow up, and he's been doing it with the Mets.
Isn't he on your fantasy team?
Oh yeah, and I'm playing you, and this is not good.
I know you're playing me, and I am punishing poor Pete Hoffman, but it's not like I took any positive out of Ryan Helsley blowing up because it helps our fantasy matchup. Trust me. I love fantasy baseball. I put the Mets first. There's never any conflict when there's player issues. But what's funny about fantasy is I'm having a very good year this year. Hoff is battling for his division championship. I beat the crap out of the guy who he's battling with last week to put Hoff in first place. Now I'm beating the crap out of Hoff, and I'm going to take him out of first place. So I'm just a bad guy. Like, I am controlling your division by just destroying the two teams that are battling for it. So,
and let me just tell you something. I typically don't trade or I don't pick up Mets for this reason, because I don't want them to fail for me. I just want to root for the team. It's a very weird thing. I traded for Tyler Rogers. He got then traded to the Mets, and that sucked. So then I went and traded for Ryan Helsley. I'm like, screw it. I might as well get piggyback that. That's going to be great. And I traded for Sean Manaea. I may be the reason why these guys suck.
Yeah. Boy, that's some homeristic stuff right there. And it hasn't worked. It has not worked.
No.
We'll get your emails in a second, but knock one out of the park and raise the apple with Takara Chuhai, a sparkling cocktail that blends real shochu spirits with the delicious flavors of fruits locally grown in Japan. It's available at Citi Field in Fuji Apple, of course, white peach and lemon. Had one the other night with my wife. It was a date night at Citi Field. And the best part was the drink. Because it certainly wasn't the game, which turned into an absolute disaster, as has this season. I mean, this really has been an awful season. All right, you want to hear some emails from people that are consuming this live?
Yes.
I like that.
I love that stuff. Do that.
Nate Rides, who is to blame? Longtime listener, first-time writer, and in, because I can't take it anymore. First of all, a positive with a shout-out to Hoffman. Your bump music songs for BT and Sal are top notch. Look at that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Definite props for some of the classic throwback jams, as well as more rare and obscure great songs. Got to show some love, as it's a highlight for me every day. Now for the disaster we call the Mets. Evan, you're killing us here, and here is why you are to blame. You changed the vibes up after the Milwaukee series with a new theme song. We finally win a game, and you immediately go back to the old song and see what's happened. You had this year's grimace in that new song, and you didn't even realize. Bring that song back ASAP. Well, that is a Hoff thing. You're going to give Hoff credit for the bump music on the midday show. I sent him the new Rico song as a, hey, let's see if it changes the vibes. They do win a game. And right after the drive home, or for the drive home, he went back to the old Rico song. So that one's on you, Hoff. Explain yourself for why you abandoned the song that could have sparked the whole season.
Well, I was told by, this is why you don't listen to people upstairs. I was told by somebody, whatever you do, please don't change the theme song to some AI nonsense. And I was like, it's just for fun. Evan's having some fun. Where that's all it is. I didn't realize it was going to do, make some magic. I didn't realize that.
Who cares if it's an AI song? If it's going to be magic, you got to stick with it.
All right. Sure. Now, here's a serious question. did we touch the money? Do I do it to play at the end of this episode? Do I wait till the next episode? What do I do?
I think you got to play it at some point during this episode. Like, okay. It just has to be thrown in. Like, you let me know when you're about to do it. We'll all sing along, and then we can just move on.
All right, well, here we go.
I gotta tell you, I don't know why that shouldn't just be the theme song. Like, it's corny, but it's catchy, and it gets to the point, and it's unique. Like, I think it should just be permanent. Like, what's wrong with that song?
All right, listen, this is your podcast. You do what you want. I just press the buttons.
I think it should be the song unless they keep losing, and then it becomes annoying and cheesy. We get rid of it, but. Here's the thing about annoying and cheesy. Grimace is annoying and cheesy, but for some reason it sort of worked last year, you know, and you got to stick with what works.
Listen, and I got to be honest with you. That's one thing. Take it for what it was. There was a lot of gimmicks going on. The Javi Lopez stuff when he threw his glove in the stand, stuff like that.
Jorge. Yes.
Jorge. What a F. Lopez, Mr. Lopez. Regardless. A lot of nonsense went on, and not saying it was distractions, but it was just good, fun things that were taking place that we got together and just gathered around. There's nothing. There's no vibe. There was a stupid – let me ask you a question, and you tell me. Why is there a sandal after every home run?
I don't know.
Yeah, nobody does. Nobody has a clue. The fans don't even know what you're doing. You got to at least let the fans know what's going on.
I get that last year had a great vibe, and we credit it a lot for the success this team had. I don't know if the vibes are the reason why this team isn't working. I don't know if the weirdness of a sandal is the reason why this team isn't winning. Usually there are baseball reasons to describe why things are good and why things are bad. Like, even last year, we could talk all we want about Grimace and OMG and all the great vibes. In the second half of the year last year, their starting pitching went deep into games, like consistently. So there were baseball reasons to describe why things went well. Just like in 2023, there were baseball reasons to describe why it didn't. It didn't have to be a toxic clubhouse or everyone hates each other. It didn't have to be that. And yet we looked for that. Yeah, and it was baseball reasons. And I think this year, unfortunately, we've got baseball reasons, even though they have a lot of talent, and the talent should produce more success than we've seen. I don't necessarily think it's vibes or sandals or anything like that.
Could it be that Griffin Canning was the key and we lost him in the rotation?
Well,
I mean,
Griffin Canning was pitching well. I mean, they lost pitching depth. They lost Tylor Megill, too. You know, he's on his way back, but Tylor Megill was pitching well. And we would scoff at 5 innings, 2 runs. We would scoff at that. Bro, we would give anything for that. Like, the Tylor Megill 5-inning, 3-run performance that I would always call, well, that's a Megill. I mean, you're telling me they couldn't have used that over the last month? John writes, guys, looking at the Mets as an IBO, Independent Baseball Observer, for those that are not familiar, I think you, Evan, made a great point earlier on WFAN with your comments about David Stearns and his heat check approach to starting pitching in free agency. Your starting pitching was a major reason you guys lost to the Dodgers in the playoffs, and you did not improve the rotation and probably downgraded. The only way you guys will seriously be a threat to win the World Series is if Stearns changes his approach and begins to target high-end starting pitchers. So I said this on the air, but I've said this on the Rico, that his offseason, like, none of us loved Frankie Montas. Like, what most of us said when they signed Frankie Montas was, well, tough to question Stearns. He did a great job. The pitching lab, we'll see. And so I described it as an NBA heat check. When three-point shooting keeps going down and Jalen Brunson can't miss, what does he do? There's a heat check. I'm going to take a 30-footer because let's see. And I think David Stearns almost had a heat check moment this offseason with some of the pitching additions. And as we sit here in the middle of August, it hasn't worked. It just hasn't. I mean, Frankie Montas is probably the best example of that. Now, the comment John makes, which is he should change his approach and go after high-end starters, I will admit, and I raise my hand, I wanted them to go after Corbin Burns. that wouldn't have worked. I mean, Corbin Burns is missing the entire season and part of next year. So there's a major risk in that because you're investing a lot of money in a lot of years. And even that doesn't guarantee you success.
But let me ask you a question, though. Like, that's fine. You're right. Like, there's no one knew that he was going to need Tommy John. No one knew any of that stuff. But say, for example, at the trade deadline, there you should have realized that the pitching staff right now is an issue. And unless they always thought of calling up McLean and maybe Tong or Sproat or whatever, whoever they're going to add on to, why weren't they more aggressive in at least bringing somebody here? And I understand you could always say they didn't know these guys weren't traded, but for a guy like Zach Gallen or a guy like Trevor Rogers in Baltimore, why did they not say, you know what, if we're going to give up a ton of prospects for some relief pitchers, how about we do the same for a starting pitcher?
Because I think, A, they knew Brandon Sproat and Nolan McLean were going to come up, which Nolan McLean is doing in a couple of days. And number two, I hate to go back to the same thing. Starting pitchers weren't moved. There just wasn't a great market for starting pitchers. And I don't think these starting pitchers that were out there, like Charlie Morton, I don't think it was that big of an upgrade.
No, like,
I don't think the issue is the trade deadline. I think the issue when we look back at this season is going to be the offseason. It's going to be what was done during the offseason, like letting Severino go, like not bringing Quintana back when the Mets had some starting pitching needs in spring training with injuries.
And he wanted to come back.
No, I know. And we talked about it. And this was back in March when they started to have injuries that Sean Manaea specifically, that they should have brought him back. And he wasn't making a lot of money. I think those are the fairer critiques of Stern's approach of pitching more than the trade deadline. Here's a positive email. It's always good to hear. And no, it's not positive, Tommy. Edward writes, the Mets will make the playoffs. Longtime Rico listener here. And when it comes to the state of the Mets, you and I are always in agreement over pretty much everything. Of course, you continue to make very salient points, but I cannot join you in Panic City. I've seen every single pitch this season, and I wholeheartedly believe the Mets will make the playoffs. Now, once we're in the playoffs, well, I'm not very confident the team can go the distance, but it's the Mets and the Reds for the final playoff spot. Forget the Cardinals, forget the Giants, forget the Marlins. The Reds are a good story, but the Mets are too talented to be beat out for the playoffs by the Reds. Yes, what's going on right now is incredibly frustrating and concerning, but this is going to be the story for the rest of the season. The Mets will make the playoffs. Again, I've watched every pitch this season. They have the pieces to make the playoffs. It may not be pretty right now, but after what happened last season, I know they can weather this period of time. This is not some delusional Met fan. I'm quite level-headed and objective. The Mets will make the playoffs. Edward, appreciate the optimism, but your optimism is all based on not believing in the Reds. It wasn't about the Mets and, hey, don't worry, I think Senga Manaea is going to turn a corner and Juan Soto is going to be clutch. It was more, you don't believe in Cincinnati.
Can I just say one thing, too? Because think about this. They had an opportunity to gain some games on Cincinnati, and the Philadelphia Phillies failed to help the Mets out. Okay, fine. The Phillies lost again today. We can't even catch ground on them. Whenever they lose, we can keep on losing too. It is a problem. We're not getting help on either side. It's eventually the Mets just have to do it themselves, but they got to do it.
I got you. Rooney writes, Evan, the Mets are hard to watch. I like Mendoza, but he's starting to give me Robert Sala vibes. Jesus, another Robert Sala comparison? We're in trouble. He looks like he's staring into space, which Sala was the best in the NFL at. Just once I'd like to hear him get on the offense when they disappear or get on the starter pitching as well. Once he started talking about how good Bryce Elder was, I turned the TV off. I hope things get better next year, but I don't even know how they would since most of the team is under contract. Thanks for the podcast. I don't want to think about next year. Like, I don't even want to get to that area of, hey, what are they doing in the offseason if they miss the playoffs? Trust me, we'll have a lot of time for that. But I think, and I will criticize moves that I don't like that Mendy makes, I think this is not about the manager right now. This is about a bunch of high-priced talent that is just not performing on a consistent level. I mean, Francisco Lindor has had an uneven year. It looks like he's getting hot. That's great. He's had an uneven year. Brandon Nimmo has had an uneven year. Juan Soto has not been impactful. We're also seeing Mendy try to figure out, like, who the hell should play? Brett Beatty's been playing every day because he's hitting. Mark Vientos on mothballs. Like, what happened to him? Starling Marte gets hot. So, okay, let's play him. Like, I agree with trying to ride the hot hand, but I think a lot of this is just performance. I do want to get to Vientos. Mark Vientos has completely disappeared. And I don't like it. I think that there were signs that Vientos was waking up. He had a couple of extra base hits. He was having good at-bats. And he has started one game in the last six. And they're facing nothing but righties against Seattle. So where are the at-bats coming from? And it's tough because Beatty's deserving to play. Marte had been deserving to play. But it's tough to see Vientos completely buried. Now, what they have coming up against Seattle is three right-handers. And the Mariners are a good team. This is not the team you want to face. Like, outside of Milwaukee, Seattle's actually one of the hottest teams in baseball. But they are scheduled to face Luis Castillo, Brian Wu, and George Kirby over the course of these next three games. So three pretty good pitchers. They're going to throw Manaea in game one on regular rest. Nolan McClain will make his major league debut Saturday. Very excited to see that. And then Clay Holmes on regular rest Sunday night. I mean, just pray. I don't even know what to expect from Clay. But how do you handle Vientos? Don't you want to see him in the lineup every once in a while?
I do, but I'm kind of happy that the Mets have made a decision and said, like, hey, we're going to try to stick with somebody. Again, I'm not even a Brett Beatty guy, but the fact that they're putting him out there every day, like, that's what they need to do. Give him as much time out there as possible. That's what they did with – and listen, don't get me wrong. They gave Beatty a ton of chances in the past, and he failed. But you just got to do it at this point in time. You can't keep on rotating three young kids and hopefully somebody figures it out. Stick with one guy. And they should have, though, either sent one down and traded the other. I'll be honest.
Nick Stasiak is very upset with me, and I want to at least let him respond to something that he is bothered by that I'm doing. I have tweeted this out numerous times. I've mentioned this on the air that since April 30th, the Mets are a below 500 team.
Yes, I've seen
it. Which is just the reality. I think they're.
And is that Jeff McNeil? Is that Jeff McNeil on the photo?
Yeah, it's StatMuse, which is an interesting app and website, but the Muse, StatMuse. And so, yeah, they use Jeff McNeil as an image, which I have no idea why. But bottom line is the Mets are 43-48 since April 30th, which is a 91-game sample size. Nick does not like that I put this information out there. Nick writes, I'm emailing about this again because it actually physically bothers me. I don't know why you're trying to create a false narrative that the Mets have been bad since April 30th. You'll point to the overall record of 43-48, but break that up into two parts. From April 30th to June 12th, 24-15. From June 13th to now, they're 19-33. From opening day to June 12th, they were quite literally the best team in baseball that had one bad week. The reason I point it out is because over the course of May, June, July, and part of August, so nearly 4 months, they are an under 500 team. And you can do this, and I get this, Nick, that you're saying, hey, I'm picking a date, and I can pick any date I want and try to put a narrative out there. Well, I mean, yeah, you're right, but the numbers are still the numbers. Like, yeah, they've had good stretches in the middle of that, just like they had a seven-game winning streak in the middle of this 19-33 stretch. My point is they've been a bad team for a few months and they've been an average team after a really good April. Like, yeah, there are bunches during that stretch where they won games, just like there are bunches during the 19-33 where they won games. So it shouldn't make you physically ill, but maybe I'll stop tweeting it because Nick's a good guy and I don't want to make him physically ill. But here's the point, and maybe we could agree on this. They're not good, and they haven't been good in a while. Like, the one thing that bothers me is hearing, well, it's baseball. It's a streaky sport. I know that. I know it's a streaky sport. They haven't been good streaky in a long time. Their one good streak was, like, random. Because that feels like the outlier based on the way this team has performed this year. So hopefully they go to Seattle and have success. Hopefully Seattle comes here and they have success, because their home record is also completely outdated. I mean, their home record right now is 39-23. It got off to such a great start. It's gotten worse over the last few weeks because they don't win games at home. All you got to do is look at their recent stretch. They just lost 2 out of 3 to Atlanta. They got swept by Cleveland. They lost 2 out of 3 to the freaking Giants. It's been a rough stretch.
And now I do want to remind people of something, and I hate to bring up the Yankees, but last year the New York Yankees, I think, were the first team to 50 wins, and they were on fire. And then the rest of the season, they were hovered around 500. Mm-hmm. They were, and at times they were pretty bad too.
Yeah.
And where'd they wind up?
Look, Hoff. The Mets can make the postseason, which they better, they absolutely have the talent over a short period of time to go on a run where they're in the World Series. Like, I will actually argue with anyone who says they can't do anything in October. That's ridiculous. First of all, I think anybody that makes the playoffs can get hot for 2.5 weeks. And I think a team with this amount of talent, sure, they can get hot. So I think they can, which is why I want to be in the playoffs very badly, because I know baseball has become that kind of sport, but they got to get there. And my big concern as we sit here right now is, are they going to get there? They cannot continue at this pace. To me, they got to be better than a 500 team. And for anyone that wants to look at Cincinnati and say, well, I don't believe in them, I don't buy them, they got talent on this team. They got a lot of good starting pitching. Miguel Andujar is all of a sudden blossoming into a star. How about that happening? But look at their rotation. You know, Nick Lodolo is pretty good. Hunter Green is awesome. Andrew Abbott's had a great year. Like, they got good starting pitching. They're actually legitimately good. They've got good arms in their bullpen. Like, I can't expect that they're just going to fall off and the Mets could win 84 games and make the playoffs. I don't really think that's the case.
I agree. And they have one of the best players in baseball right now. Ellie De La Cruz is going to be one of the best players in baseball. He is arguably a spark plug. And that's something that I think if Lindor can stay hot, which he's been now the past couple games.
That's the good sign that he is getting hot.
I'll tell you this much, no matter what Pete Alonso does, no matter how many solo home runs Juan Soto hits, Francisco Lindor has been the spark plug of this team. If he's good, the team's good.
Now, a couple of things as we get set for this weird series the Mets are about to embark on. 2 games at Citi Field, then a game at the Little League site. I am going on vacation. We will still be doing the Rico Bronya because I'm a sick puppy. And my wife is like, nah, it's fine. Do the Rico Bronya. But I have some warnings because I think sometimes there's an unfair expectation of us. I had a guy at Citi Field say, hey, I was really upset you didn't do a Rico after game 2. We did a Rico after game 1. We're doing a Rico after game 3. We can't do it every single night. Maybe someday, but not now. So game 1 of the series against Seattle, I am driving to North Carolina in the middle of the night. I haven't decided how I'm going to consume the Met game. I may listen to it on the radio old school. I may DVR it and just watch it when I get to North Carolina at 3 o'clock in the morning. Either way, even if there's a perfect game, there isn't going to be an instant reaction Rico after Friday night's game. Saturday, we'll see. I'll be in a location, so it's possible. But we do guarantee that Sunday night after the series is over, there will be a Rico Bronya series recap edition. Now, I speak to Pete Hoffman and the audience when I ask this question. Most people don't care when the podcast host or the radio host they know goes on vacation. It's like, whatever. Are you doing the podcast? But they care about this vacation because they know, if you're a loyal Rico listener, that when I go to North Carolina, that means it's time for the annual Drunk Rico. 2 years running. Last year brought so many great memories, like, come on, guys, this team's gutless. They're not making the playoffs. A lot of giggling, a lot of fun. I'm a happy drunk. I'm a laughing drunk.
Yes. Love the drunk.
So, Hoff, we got to coordinate here. The Mets are off Monday. They play Tuesday night, Wednesday night, and Thursday late afternoon. Those are the prime days for a drunk Rico that we can schedule and tell the audience, hey, we're going to do it. And if you can responsibly drink, you can join us and be drunk while listening. So which day fits best for you, Hoff?
Well, considering I'm going to be in Disney.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm not. I have to double check my schedule. I haven't talked to the wife yet because they're in Disney right now. So, but I will find out. What day do you want to do it? Tuesday or Wednesday? It's got, because Thursday I'm going to be traveling, and then I got the Giants.
I don't think Thursday. Thursday will be your, you know, series recap. Rico Bronya. It's a late afternoon game. I think Tuesday or Wednesday are both prime candidates. I would kind of lean towards Tuesday, like the opener of the series.
Okay.
I think a Tuesday night. And for those out there who would be live on YouTube, as always, and then post it as soon as we can to wherever you download your podcast. So Tuesday night, drunk Rico.
Yes, I will. I'm going to put a request into my wife, and hopefully I could skip out on whatever fun we're having at Disney.
Beautiful. So it's all signed up. In case you're curious, David Peterson is in line to pitch the Tuesday night game against the Washington Nationals. It's about a 6:45 first pitch. And so responsibly, if you want to join in on the fun, I mean, you want to go Mio sparkling sake, you can do that. You can do whatever you want, but obviously be responsible. We're having fun. It's a good time. We're doing it in the confines of a safe place. And the good news is, and I think this makes the architect feel good, he doesn't have to worry about me saying anything that's going to get me fired, because I'm not a bad drunk. I'm a happy drunk. So they'll be more like laughing at our pain than anything else on the Drunk Rico.
Isn't that what we do anyway? We just laugh at our pain?
I mean, pretty much. There's a lot of screaming, yelling, bitterness, and then there's laughing. That's pretty much what it is. But we do appreciate you listening and downloading. We remind you to download and subscribe to the Rico Bronya. We guarantee episodes after each series, and we throw in a lot of instant reactions after games and news breaks. So download the Rico Bronya, rate, subscribe, do whatever you have to do. We do appreciate it. Thank you very much for listening, and keep your chin up, because it's baseball. You never know. That's how I'm going to make people feel. You never know. Maybe we'll laugh about this in 2 months. Maybe the Mets are just toying with us and they're going to get hot. Probably not, but you never know. Thank you very much for listening to episode 531 of Rico Bronya. Rico Bronya, let the chant begin. Rico Bronya, let's hear it again. Rico Bronya, this show's on fire. With Evan Roberts, we're taking it higher. Rico Bronya, oh, Rico Bronya, yeah. Rico Bronya, let's go. Rico Bronya. Let's run the show.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.